This is a podcast from ABC Overnights. Here's Michael Pavlich.
Did you know that in the 1930s, the Australian Parliament debated whether they would allow women into Parliament House who were wearing pants? It seems pretty mind-blowing now, doesn't it, all these years later? But that's what happened, and it was very, unfashionable, unthought of, uncouth, perhaps, for women to wear pants. They needed to dress up like women and like ladies. But fortunately, common sense prevailed, and eventually women were able to wear pants, and now probably more women are wearing pants than dresses. We thought we'd look into this because it's a pretty interesting little part of Australian history. Dr. Lorinda Kramer is a lecturer in cultural heritage at the Museum Studies at Deakin University. Good morning, Lorinda.
Good morning, Pav. It's really good to be with you.
Yeah, you too. This is a pretty interesting little story, I've got to say.
It is, isn't it? It really caught my eye when I initially stumbled across it.
Did you know that there's a muscle in the bladder called the detrusor?
I did not.
The stuff we're learning, I'll tell you, on the program this morning. Very interesting. I'll read you this one because I read it just 10 minutes ago or so. The 1700s, pantaloons reached America where they became called pants. The pair remained. Celts, however, called pantaloons trews, which devolved into the trousers. Slacks came from Latin with laxus, meaning loose. Hence, loose pantaloons were called slacks. So there's a bit of the background to some of the terminology that we're going to be using this morning, Lorinda.
Yeah, I love it. And I think there's really interesting the way that the terms have shifted and shaped have been really interesting. And I love how they're now all quite interchangeable with each other. I think we kind of throw around pants, trousers and slacks in place of each other almost.
Looking, as I was saying, it's a bit unfair because men have been wearing dresses for centuries, Lorinda.
That's
so it's a bit unfair for men to say you can't wear pants.
It really is. I think those common origins of dress where, both men and women wore robes draped around their bodies. That is a really interesting kind of origin of dress for everyone. And then it really did start to split or divide down the middle where trousers became the most common form of garment for men, for their lower halves. Women, on the other hand, continued to wear these looser garments around their lower halves. And look, your listeners will probably know some of these origin stories about, trousers coming into be to help men, for example, ride horses. Those having that divided leg would aid them in riding horses, which was, of course, very common for all kinds of purposes at that time. So they kind of had that practical push to begin to start to wear them.
Yeah, no, it's come from totally practical because they are practical fashion accessory, you'd have to say. One of the interesting things here is because normally it was men or conservative types jumping up and down to complain that women were dressing immodestly as far as not having enough clothes on. They'd have to go down the beach and wear the full, full kit from the ankle, be dressed from or covered from the ankle to the shoulder. But here's the opposite of that, where it's nothing to do with, flashing a bit of flesh. It's all to do with, no, you can't have our pants, you look like a man. So it was all about that gender demarcation and making sure nobody stepped over the line.
It really was, and by the time that I'm really interested in, so those first decades of the 20th century in particular, and 1933 is a year that I've marked as being, I think, really quite significant. Trousers had become so strongly attached to men and to masculinity. They were really essential to how we had these kind of ideas of power and professionalism and authority running through clothes, and particularly for those men who wore trousers as part of a suit. Suits were really part of this kind of idea of power and professionalism. So it was that they had become so tightly tied to men by that time. It was almost inconceivable, I think, in some minds that women might start to wear trousers.
Yeah, I mean, who'd want to be practical, hey? I mean, think about it, like where we've come from here. There wasn't maybe only 50, 100, 150 years before that women were getting around in these big, bulky things that look more like something you'd see in an aircraft hangar than something you'd expect someone to be wearing.
That's such an interesting time as well. So that if we think about the 1850s, for example, and this is where women started to wear garments that had a divided leg, and I mean this in their underwear. So women at this time were wearing very full skirts. They were often bell-shaped in that 1850s period. And these new kinds of petticoats had been introduced called cage crinolines. And so they allowed the skirt to be held out away from the legs. Before that, women might have worn multiple layers of petticoats, but now the skirt was held away by this cage crinoline. And it was for this sense of modesty, that women were encouraged to start wearing underwear, and particularly drawers that had the divided leg. But women were really hesitant to wear these because, again, coming back to this sense that these were masculine garments, it was really difficult to get their heads around the fact that the divided legs acted as a form of modesty underneath those skirts. One of the reasons, so the cage crinoline, of course, held that skirt away from the body, but it was also likely to sway when women walked, so it could flash their legs to observers, which was something that was, you know, completely unthought of or unwanted at that time. So that in itself, that move to even wear divided legs as undergarments was also really such a struggle for a lot of people to come to terms with.
Mm. Look, and I didn't know this, but I found out in doing the research that bloomers, they were actually named after a person who was a campaigner for women to dress more practically.
That's right, Amelia Bloomer, and she was very similar time, so the mid 19th century. What she was really about, again, was women in practical clothes that they could move about in. And so she was one of the what were called a group of dress reformers. She was based in America, and in advocating for this costume that was given her name, the Bloomer costume, what she suggested women should be able to wear were full trousers, and these were quite loose, but they gathered at the ankle, and that they would be worn under a shorter skirt that came about to the knees. And certainly there was interest in this Bloomer costume here in Australia. The news of it did, you know, find its way across the oceans. And so Australian newspapers were really interested in reporting on this Bloomer costume. Most of them saw it as a novelty. They didn't think it was going to take off. But there was certainly, a desire to disseminate this information for Australian readers, both men and women who might be interested in these ideas of dress reform.
Look, and it needed to be done. I mean, just, as I was trying to allude before, those wire dress things, they just looked like the most impractical piece of clothing I think ever been invented by a long way, I would suggest. It's more like a tent than a dress.
They were also quite dangerous as well. We have stories of women who would stand too close to the fire in trying to get warm, and you know their skirts would light up. And so there are really terrible stories about how dangerous these were as well, to have your skirt so far away from your body.
It just doesn't look like anything that would be at all practical in many ways. Sitting down, standing up, dancing. Well, look, talking about practicality, I mean, that's where we're at, isn't it? Because the trouser was a much more practical item of clothing and therefore more suited to men and women to wear.
It really was. It was so much more practical. And I think that's why some women started to play with the idea of wearing trousers in the mid-19th century. So this is very, very early for women to be wearing trousers. But some of them did it, you know, as a form of being able to move across the land easier, or as a form of disguise in order to protect themselves. And so now I'm here, I'm moving us to the gold rush. And if we think about Victoria, or Port Phillip as it was known before, it became Victoria in 1851, we do have very few rare examples of women writing about how they have put on pants for those particular reasons. So for one woman, so that she can move across the land much more freely, so that she can kind of stride across the paddocks, for example, alongside her husband. So she adapted a pair of her husband's trousers in order to do that. But we also have a couple of examples of women on the Victorian diggings in the early 1850s who do adopt this digger's costume, as they call it. So they really start to wear these broad-brimmed hats, trousers and shirts, very much men's fashions and very distinctive gold diggers' fashions at that time. And this is for safety. This is use as a disguise so that they blend in with the other men on the diggings. And both women I'm referring to here who have read about in various emigrants' guides and gold rush guides call this as part of, you know, disguising their sex or parting with their sex. They take on this masculine costume in order that they can go relatively unnoticed in this very masculine landscape.
Look, just on the side of that, it's been well noted and documented that the bushrangers, escape capture and as a form of disguise, would often don women's clothes and ride around. So, not too different in many ways, is it?
It's a really interesting reverse of that idea. Absolutely, this idea of disguise. And it is because these costumes are so strongly linked to one or the other that it can be really, I think, startling to see somebody in the dress of a different gender. Yeah, it's a very, very effective form of disguise.
As Peter Carey, I think, documented in his book, The True History of the Kelly Gang, that some of the fellas used to actually enjoy it a little bit more than just running away from the police. I got here, had bloomers under the sports uniform for modesty, matching colour and fabric so it didn't show undies. They were worn under the bloomers. Mm. That was at all girls' schools in the 60s and 70s, says Amber. And I've got as well here, in the UK, pants are the knickers or jocks and never the outer garment. Can be quite embarrassing until you learn about this. Did you know that, Lorinda?
I did. So there's really interesting twists and turns, I think, in the use of language between Britain, Australia and America, and the uses in some and not the other. So it's very difficult not to stumble into using the wrong one.
Yes. Okay, I've got here. Most of my working life was in offices. This is from Kate. During that time, I was forced to wear frocks and suits and, of course, stockings. Mm-hmm. We were told we were not going to the beach. It was not until 1995 that I wore tailored slacks to work for the first time. That's from Kate. I believe there are still places that insist that women employees wear dresses.
Yeah, I found this really interesting in the last, the last handful of years, thinking about where do we still see women wearing dresses or skirts. Certainly, like in this last 5-year period, I think there have been changes made, and that's in places like school uniforms. So there's been a lot of discussions in the last 5 years around whether girls should be allowed to wear trousers and shorts. And in many cases, yes, they absolutely can, instead of a school dress. One of the other examples that really comes to mind here is for flight attendants. There is a small number of airlines who do allow their female staff to wear trousers or a skirt according to their preference. But I think it's much, much more common, at least in my experience, to see, male flight attendants in trousers and female flight attendants in skirts. So yes, absolutely. And just if I might go back to Kate's comment about wearing a pantsuit. And I think that's a really interesting moment in the 80s and 90s where we have these very strong power suits with big shoulders that start to be worn by women across Australia for office wear and for a really striking form of office wear. But yes, even as Kate was saying, even then, I think there was still some uncertainty over whether this was appropriate for women's wear. So the history is a really long one. It kind of stretches and contracts, I think, in really interesting ways that we continue still to see today.
Yeah, look, it's amazing that code would still be enforced, especially when you think about the airline industry. In the unlikely event that something went wrong, as they keep telling us it's going to be an unlikely event, you'd think you'd be better off in pants, wouldn't you, than a skirt? Anyway.
Yeah, you really would, absolutely.
Just my thought on that one. I've got here, this is really interesting too. Molly and Solutia sent this one. It says, we look at everything from a Western world lens. Skirt is official garment for men in Fiji. Men wear dress-like clothes in many Islamic countries. So for us, wearing trousers should never have been a big deal. That's a fair point Molly's making there.
Absolutely is. Yes, absolutely.
We're with Dr. Lorinda Kramer, and we're talking all about women wearing pants in Australia and the evolution of that. She's a lecturer in cultural heritage and museum studies at Deakin University. Lorinda, I've got another text here. We'll head to the phones in just a second. Roberta says, I trained as a nurse in the early 80s. We wore a dress and stockings as our uniform. We had to hitch our dresses into the sides of our undies to be able to do the physical parts of our jobs. rolling patients, etc.
Yeah, fascinating.
We got so hot working in stockings as well. Would have been so much easier if we could have been in pants. I also noticed the Australian Open this year, the ball boys wore shorts, but the ball girls were wearing skirts. Made me wonder if things have really changed, says Roberta. I wonder about that. Yeah, ball girls are allowed to wear pants?
Well,
I wonder.
I thought they were.
Think they should
maybe
be.
Maybe Roberta's seen that. Yes.
We might have to look into that
I need
one.
To go and look at my, yeah.
And nurses, for goodness sake, you're actually making, they've got a hard enough job to do as it is. You're making them wear skirts and making the job even more difficult just for the sake of them not wearing pants. That just seems really, not the best way of going about things.
Yeah, and I think that it's really this, we keep coming back to practicalities, and I think that's, you know, how pants or trousers started to be seen as more acceptable on women. And of course, that is around war, World War I and World War II, when women started to do what were commonly thought of as men's jobs. And it's kind of at this point that people start to think, oh, yes, women do need to wear clothing that really allows them to do this kind of work. So it's really World War I and World War II that we start to have these shifts in mindset of women wearing trousers and overalls as they do these really practical forms of labour that before would have been done by men. So I think that's one of the really important steps that we see in this move towards having pants as much more acceptable for women.
Mm. Look, they don't, nurses don't, can wear pants now, can't they?
They can, yes.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Scrubs, of course, in the theatre, but what about around the ward?
So... Absolutely.
All right, good. I'm glad about that. Amber has called us from Parramatta. Good morning, Amber.
Oh, good morning. I had a bit of a fight on in the 70s, I think it was, when we were trying to get into pants and move the zips from the side and the back to the front.
Right, okay.
Well, we
that was controversial, was it?
We couldn't have a fly. It just wasn't on.
Actually, someone said here, Amber, that's you. It says slacks had zips down the side or back for women. Initially, no zips in the front. So, yeah, okay.
Yeah, we could have pants. I had a pantsuit probably early on. I had a play suit. Something I didn't wear was the culottes. I couldn't get into them. But I had a real fight with my mum about a zip down the front in jeans.
We couldn't make it too easy for you, Amber. We were letting you wear pants after all. We don't want to put the zip in a practical place. Okay. Thanks, Am. Look after yourself.
Thank you.
Did you aware of that, Lorinda?
Yeah, one of the really interesting things I've been looking at is mail order catalogues. I'm really keen to see what the actual form of these early women's trousers or slacks took. And if I come back to my 1933 date, which really has captured my imagination. One of the reasons for that, I was looking through the old mail order catalogues from Maya. And I noticed a pair of slacks, and they had buttons down the side. So that was their access point, a beautiful wide leg, turn-up cuff at the bottom, a really lovely waistband. And these particular slacks really caught my eye because they were called Marlene Dietrich slacks. I was what's happening here? Yeah. And of course, in 1933, not only did we have all of those conversations about young women who had gone to Parliament House wearing slacks and should they be banned or not, but we always had the rise of these Hollywood female stars wearing slacks, wearing pants. And Marlene Dietrich was one who did so with gusto. You know, she was really, really well known at that time for being very charismatic, very glamorous, but also androgynous in her dress.
Yeah.
So she'd been filmed a few years earlier in a movie called Morocco, and she had really shocked moviegoers by wearing a man's tuxedo. And then by 1933, you know, there's newspaper reports about her doing all kinds of things, including going on holiday, and it's very widely reported that she has not packed a single dress in her luggage to go on holiday, that she's wearing only dinner jackets and trousers instead. And kind of this news is reported globally, also with these lines how tailors should be aware that they will probably be rushed for orders for what were then called the Dietrich trousers that she used to wear in grey flannel. And so then this Maya mail order catalogue comes the year after that. They've obviously also taken stock of this news of Marlene Dietrich wearing trousers and recognize that women have this desire to follow these new fashions that they're seeing overseas and these really exciting and quite controversial changes as well. Yeah, it's really fascinating stuff.
So that was the 30s, yeah? Marlene Dietrich appeared with her.
That's it.
And then, you know, later on, as you said, we had the Hollywood stars, Audrey Hepburns and even Marilyn Monroe, we had a text before. They all started wearing the pants. Flying the flag for a more practical attire for women. Good luck to them as well. pioneers in many ways.
They really were, and I think that idea of wearing pants so publicly, being photographed, being reported wearing them, really would have taken quite a bit of courage at that time when you know, it is much more common, much more accepted to be wearing a skirt. I think it does take courage to be photographed and reported on wearing something outside the ordinary.
It's so hard to try and put yourself in the headspace of the time to think that such a trivial thing could be so controversial. It's mind-boggling, really. Alan has called from Gawler. G'day, Alan.
Hi, good morning, Pav and Luenda. I just came in and got up a while ago and just started listening a bit. I grew up in the 50s and I noticed things happening with some women. Most women wore skirts in those days and frocks and so on. And one or two becoming more adventurous and wearing what were called slacks. And I thought, why are they called slacks or alluding to slack? And I won't say too much about that word. But anyway, women wore things because they could do other activities, and driving a car was very rare for a woman back in those days.
Yeah, we heard that there are perhaps Latin roots in the word slacks. Have you looked into slacks, Lorinda, when we started calling them slacks?
Well, so I've been really interested in the kind of the interchangeability across this time. And certainly there are people writing in these particular years that we're talking about of slacks, both for men and for women. So it really, I think it starts that the words start to get a little bit muddied around this time. I think the Latin roots are correct though for slacks. And if I could just continue on, that's so interesting thinking about the 1950s and Alan's, recognition of more women starting to wear trousers or slacks in different forms. Because the 1950s are really the period, if we think about divided leg garments, when denim jeans are really embraced by youth culture. So before then, there'd been very much a practical working garment. It's something like Levo 501s, for example, were first patented in 1873 and kind of worn on the Californian gold diggings. But by the 1950s, denim jeans were much more widely worn by both men and women. A lot of the Australian newspapers started to report this new wearing of denim jeans. But they also started to link denim jeans and also divided leg garments, so whether we call them trousers or slacks, with a new Australian youth subculture. And I think many of your listeners will be familiar with bodgies and widgies.
Yes, widgies.
That's right. So the widgies were the girls. And so they started to wear jeans, pedal pushers with sweaters, for example, and bodgies, their male counterparts, would wear things like blue denim jeans and what were called campus sweaters. They look like American college sweaters, for example. And we start to see reports moving through newspapers at that time that kind of associate bodgies and widgies, and they're wearing all of these what were kind of quite new and transgressive clothes with crime. So I start to see, stories of them stealing cars in their denim jeans.
Those reprobate teenagers in their radical pants. like I said, it is pretty hard to put yourself in the headspace of the way people were thinking back in those days. It's sort of left scratching your head going, what were they thinking? We got a text, a phone call from Maureen, who's got an interesting story. G'day, Maureen.
Oh, hello. Good morning to both of you.
Hi.
In the early 70s, I was a law clerk in Sydney, and my job was often to instruct a barrister in court. And on this particular day, I wore a pantsuit for the first time, and it was very tailored. It had a double-breasted jacket and matching trousers, and it was very, you know, it wasn't just, you know, a trousers and a top. It was very formal. And the judge hearing the case, when he saw me, he rose from the bench and stopped the case and said that he would return when the instructing clerk was appropriately attired.
You are kidding.
No.
When
no,
was this? What year?
In the early 70s.
How did you feel, Maureen?
You know, 23, 24, that sort of age. And it was ridiculous because he actually stopped the case and disadvantaged the client because I couldn't go and put a dress on, so we had to send someone else from the office who didn't know the case nearly as well as I did.
Outrageous.
That's what he said. He would return to the bench when the instructing clerk was appropriately attired.
A bit rich, Maureen, from someone who likes to wear wigs. I would have thought, but, you know.
Yes. And, you know, the attitude to jeans, around about 10 years earlier than that, I suppose, there was a fuss in the family because my uncle, who was going to be in a play at the a musical at the CYO, he was going, and he needed a pair of jeans. And my grandmother was so incensed. He was not allowed to wear pegged pants. He could not wear those blue jeans. He
yeah, those reprobate teenagers in their pants. Look, I've got it's similar to that, Maureen. I've got a text from Lynn in Cairns here. It says, I had many severe arguments with my mother every time I wore my jeans with a front fly as opposed to a zip or buttons on the side or at the back. She deemed them to be extremely unladylike.
That's right, unladylike. We all have to be ladies, and now, we couldn't cross our legs.
Now, Maureen, you were a pioneer, I would venture to say, not only being a lawyer in the 70s in that courtroom, but also, you know, prepared to hold it up for girls wearing pants. So it's great.
Well, it never occurred to me that there'd be a problem because, like, it wasn't a casual outfit. It was a very tailored outfit.
Yeah.
But there you go. You know, the silly attitude of some men, and particularly in those very formal, entourage, you know, circles. And, they're pompous.
Yes, very well-to-do. Thank you.
Yes.
And as you said, it didn't benefit the client in any way. I'm hoping it wasn't a murder trial or anything.
No, it wasn't a murder.
What happened in the end? Did your client?
We got the orders. We were looking for orders, and we got the orders we needed. But it was just a total inconvenience.
Can I ask you, Maureen? When were you actually allowed to start wearing pants into the courtroom?
During my time, I never did again.
And when did you retire?
I don't know. We just wore dresses or skirts and jackets, suits, those sort of things.
I'm interested to know, are women lawyers allowed to wear pants these days, Maureen?
Oh, they wear trousers now,
okay,
particularly, and the barristers do too. They wear trousers.
Yeah. Yep. No worries. I'm glad things have changed, Maureen. Well done, anyway, for flying the flag in the early 70s.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. You would have loved that story, Lorinda.
Oh, Maureen's story is so fascinating, and it had me thinking that, in that early 70s period when she's talking, it was still not uncommon for women to be denied entry to particular venues that had conservative dress codes if they were wearing pants. So even in that 1970s period, you know, the 70s were also really, really fascinating because of the women's liberation movement.
Yep.
And we have a lot of women, you know, protesting on the streets. And I'm thinking about one photograph in particular that I've seen splashed around quite a bit. It's a really fascinating photograph. It's from the International Women's Day March in 1975, I think it is. And one of the women wearing blue jeans actually has on her placard, handwritten, "Dress for comfort, not for style." And I really love that.
Yeah, me too. I can't think of the 70s without thinking of women in jeans. I suppose that was where it really changed and things shifted up a little bit. And that sort of a cultural revolution occurred in Australia.
Yeah, it really was. And I think probably the decade before as well, the 1960s, I think that was a really key decade as well, where we had a lot of, so we'd moved on from the Bodgies and Widgies at that particular moment to other subcultural youth groups, including the Mods.
Yeah.
Yes. And they were very well known for wearing pants. They may have been quite slim fitting, and they may also have embraced some of these newer synthetic fabrics, which gave them a stretch quality as well. So they started to be much more tighter fitting. We also have, you know, reports of female mods who were buying men's jeans and also men's trousers. So really subverting that idea that there are clothes specifically for men and for women. They go into the menswear departments of stores, particularly to buy those. Yeah.
That whole stretch denim thing went way too far, I reckon. So I'm glad we backed off from that one. Tony's called. G'day, Tone.
G'day, Pav. Good morning, Doctor. I remember back during the war, and you did touch on it, the wearing of dungarees by the ladies in the workforce. But the Land Army and all the posters had the women wearing overalls or dungarees, as we used to call them. And then the ladies always used to wear jodhpurs when they were riding horses, which was back in the 30s. But just as an aside, the girls on the farm used to laugh. It was much easier to relieve themselves behind the hedge with a skirt than with dungarees.
Right, okay. Yeah, well, there always is that, Tony. Yeah, so I imagine either way it would have been... It'll probably be a lot easier, really, with a dress now I'm thinking about it, Lorinda.
Yeah, it really would have been, Tony. That's so fascinating. And I completely agree that we probably should spend a little bit more time thinking about how important war was for this particular move. You're absolutely right in dresses and dungarees.
Not only in the war, obviously at home, working in the factories and stuff, it was actually practical attire for women to wear pants, so that's quite understandable. But what about in the services, and not only the army, but in the police force as well? Were women given some practical considerations there even?
Well, not for many years. The Victorian Police Museum had a wonderful exhibition a few years ago focused on their female officers. And no, so they have women, police women wearing skirts, high heel shoes, carrying handbags, you know, chasing after criminals with their high heels and their handbags. And
so,
I should say,
so
they're
Hollywood
not
movies are right, are they?
Yes. And so it took quite some time to move on from that particular uniform for police women as well. Yes.
Unbelievable, really. I've got here, I was born in 1971 and would like to thank Maureen and all others who pioneered the right for women to choose what to wear. And I'm sorry you had to endure such ridiculous attitudes towards dress, says Danny in East Bentley. Alan has called from Bundaberg. G'day, Alan.
Yeah, g'day. About 20, 25 years ago, I remembered hearing a news article on the radio. There's a slight variation on your theme here, but there was a bloke worked on a loading dock of a major supermarket, and he wanted to wear shorts during the summer months, but company policy was that he had to wear long trousers. But he had a girlfriend who worked in the same shop, and the women were allowed to wear skirts. So because he wasn't allowed to wear shorts on the loading dock, he wore one of his girlfriend's skirts to work. And I think he only done it the once. I think the company come down on him pretty hard.
I thought you were going to say he didn't turn up for work the next day because he'd been given notice. But I imagine, the managers probably wouldn't have been happy about him dancing around in the loading dock in a skirt.
No, so he... what's the name? Like I say, it was about 20, 25 years ago I heard the news article on the radio, and like I say, I think it was a one-off affair, yeah.
Yeah, look, well said, Alan. That's a funny story. I mean, part of this, Lorinda, is just that we had these fairly defined roles for being men and women, and, you know, stepping over the line between those two things was just not thought to be the right thing to do.
Absolutely. And Alan's just touched on there something else that I've been really interested in, the step from men wearing trousers to wearing shorts. This has been a really fascinating history as well. And that then starts to think about, yes, what is appropriate for particular workplaces? And does that start to casualise over time? And he's absolutely right that there were enormous discussions over whether men should be allowed to move from wearing trousers in hot summer months to wearing shorts. That also has a decades-long history. of you know, very slow steps towards allowing that to take place. And certainly it did happen up north faster, for obvious reasons, because, you know, it is so hot in, you know, tropical Queensland. But it took a long time to ripple down, down here, in the southern states. That idea that, you know, does wearing shorts to the workplace suggest that you're going to a picnic, that you're going to a barbecue? Does it suggest that you're actually not there to work? So these ideas of, you know, what is appropriate or not for the workplace really strongly, I think, resonate alongside this discussion as well.
So it wasn't just the women who fell victim to the impracticality of clothing, it was the blokes as well.
It wasn't. There was this real sense that men needed to wear, so in the first half of the 20th century, for example, to wear three-piece suits, even across really hot summer months, there was very little consideration to how hot it would be to have those that three-piece suit on together with a shirt and a necktie. And men, you know, long agitated for something a little more relaxed, whether that be removing a necktie, whether it be, you know, being permitted not to don their jacket or their waistcoat, for example. It took a number of years, though, and it actually took the Second World War as well, before men started to come to the office or be permitted to come to the office in something much less formal than a suit, tie, collared shirt. Yeah.
I just got a text here that I need to read. It's sort of not related, but it's worth reading anyway. It just says, Don Dunstan and safari suits. Thank you for
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
I've got this text here, though. I want to take up with you. What about all the female volleyball players who wear, and the female net players in the 90s who could not wear shorts? When I grew up and going to school, girls never wore shorts or pants. Some uniforms, school uniforms, a bit sexist with skirts for girls. Look, I'm not sure if netball players are still allowed to wear shorts.
So they do have their dresses, don't they? I've been looking at basketball players as well, particularly at that particular time that you're reading out. And you might remember that male basketball players could wear their loose baggy shorts, and women were wearing very close-fitting sports knicks at that time. So sports uniforms are a whole other really fascinating conversation that I think, yes, absolutely reflect this divide between what's okay for women to wear, what's okay for men to wear, and women's sports uniforms are often much briefer than men's. Strangely enough, because then if you think, if you kind of reverse that to the early swimsuit at the start of the 20th century, it was the opposite. Women were wearing very full swimsuits that looked almost like a dress. They were covered from their, you know, from their neck to their ankle. And I find that shift, or that reverse, is a really fascinating one.
Not going to be setting many world records dressed like that, that's for sure.
Absolutely not.
Marianne in Glendenning says, in Glendenning Valley says, my niece was a state swimmer, went to Auburn Girls High School and was stopped from competing in the state swimming champs because she wore trousers to school instead of a miniskirt. And it made the paper. And someone wanted to say barriers still exist. It was only 2023 that female tennis players were allowed to wear dark underwear at Wimbledon. You still don't see many female tennis players in shorts, do you?
No, you don't. There has been a slight shift I've been noticing in recent years, but that again is it's a very long history, particularly at somewhere like Wimbledon, you know, a very conservative club. It has had a very kind of strict dress code, and to shift that, it takes time.
Yeah. Look, it's been a fascinating discussion, Lorinda. Really enjoyed it. And thank you for joining us on the radio.
Thank you so much. Oh, it's been such a pleasure.
Well, good on you, Lorinda. Thank you. We'll talk again sometime, hey? Fascinating stuff. Lorinda Kramer there, lecturer in cultural heritage and museum studies at Deakin University.